First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com, where you can go for all the latest podcasts of this show or check out any of the stories we have archived or working on at this time. I tell you, while you're there at LouisvillePolitics.com, though, please join our email newsletter. We will send you a weekly update in your email of everything we've done, and also join our RSS feed. That way we can have the shows and everything else delivered right to your door. Yes, that's right. We'll just send it right to your email, and you'll never miss anything, I promise you. Call-in numbers, as always, on the show, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys in the listening queue, we always appreciate you, but please hit that number one on your dial pad, so that we can make sure you get heard on air as soon as possible. And for everybody else, guess what? We have a live chat, believe it or not. You can join us on our live chat, and you can use your Facebook or Twitter accounts to sign in. So no reason not to be heard. I tell you, we've always got so much going on. You know, it's amazing. It really, truly, truly is. And I have to point out that tonight is Wednesday night. For the last couple of weeks, as people have noticed, Dale the Truth is not with us on Wednesday nights. We moved his solo show to Tuesday nights, and he can't do a Wednesday night show, and all of that was because of his new work schedule. So if you're waiting for Dale the Truth to join us, not going to happen. This is the new format for a while to come anyway. You know, we have so many things going on that we continue to talk about. We've talked about, you know, all of this stuff this week. Kind of on Monday night we discussed the joke, if you will, of what is Councilman Dan Johnson and his new legislative aide, Brian Matthews. You know, it really is comical when we think about all of that. You know, but then we started talking about the budget, and Louisville Fire and Rescue was used as an example. Then we were talking about Walmart, and really, truthfully, you know, you wonder why I'm bringing all this up. Well, I'm bringing all this up for a reason. For a reason. A lot of you guys have emailed me at myviewmatters@AOL.com. For those of you who don't know the email address, you know, stating that, you know, you agree or you disagree. The majority of people agree with what we've been saying late last week and on Monday of this week, you know, about the problems we're having. But we do occasionally get one or two people who disagree. And, of course, there's people that are going to stand up for Dan Johnson and Brian Matthews, you know. I'll be honest with you, the email is clearly favorable that these guys are up to no good, but I just wanted you guys to know we do get your emails, we do read them. I'm not going to glorify any of you by right now by putting out some of the vitriol that you decide you want to espouse, but for the most part, hey, guess what? We appreciate the 95% of positive comments who come into us, and we thank you for that. And one of the reasons that we continue to get positive comments is because we actually put things out there nobody wants to talk about. You know, everybody wants to ignore it for the most part. So I was kind of surprised today when I looked at the Courier-Journal, for example, or yesterday. Well, today, I guess. But I looked at the Courier-Journal first thing this morning and just kind of glanced through it and was kind of amused to see a story from the Courier that concerns WDRB President Bill Lamb. Now, here's why. And I'll explain to you what the story is in a minute, but many years ago, back in 2006, I ran for mayor of Louisville, as most people who listen to this show know. You know, and Bill Lamb at that time was actually took a very favorable position for independent candidates and people outside of the two-party mainstream candidates for any office. You know, he said that I deserved to be heard, you know, and things like that, and took my side and talked about how I deserved to be heard. I was included. Thanks in large part to Bill Lamb and the pleas from him and some of the people in media that agreed with that. You know, I was finally allowed to be included in the final two debates, which happened to be televised debates for the mayor's race. You know, the feedback was that I did an excellent job, that I basically beat my opponents in a debate, and that's fine. Of course, it did not lead to me getting elected, which we knew wasn't going to happen when I went into that race. The race was essentially about holding people accountable. So the fact that Bill Lamb got it, that we deserve to have a voice, is one of the reasons that I continue to this day, because of my own experiences, I continue to this day trying to make sure that every candidate gets a voice. Well, since then, there's been a lot of changes. You know, when I went after Jim King and filed charges against Jim King of the Kingdom back in 2008, 2009, you know, Bill Lamb immediately started going on a defensive, using the point of view to tell the whole world what a great guy Jim King was, and never once telling the whole world that him and Jim King were good friends, which they are. You know, there was no disclosure, no nothing like that. And then further embarrassment, I guess, came in 2010 when Jackie Green, another independent, and, you know, I don't think Jackie Green has much to offer anybody in politics, you know, but Jackie Green went independent, but he deserved to be heard, and he wasn't given the opportunity to be heard. Bill Lamb's point of view then said that, you know, there was no reason to allow people like Jackie Green into the mayor's race or the discussion or the debates. So it was a complete turnaround 2006 to 2010. My opinion is that it had to do a lot with his new friends and Jim King and those in Jim King's ilk. Well, today in the Courier-Journal, that's a long story to get to where we're going, I know. But, hey, this is radio, right? So today in the Courier-Journal, WDRB president had told Bill Lamb, or I'm sorry, yeah, Bill Lamb had told Terry Miners at WHAS Radio on Friday that the Courier-Journal was basically lying because a Courier-Journal had reported that Bill Lamb was a Republican. So what did Terry Miners do? Well, he relayed the story Monday on air, said that Lamb told him that he had never been affiliated with either party, and that if WDRB were to host a debate between Senator Mitch McConnell and Allison Lundigan Grimes, that he would not moderate the debate. And this is how all this got started, because WDRB is supposedly trying to put together a debate between these two, McConnell and Grimes. Well, what makes that interesting is, you know, he goes publicly, says that the Courier-Journal is lying, and believe me, I think the Courier-Journal lies about a lot of stuff, and if they don't lie, they at least withhold information because they have their own agenda, their own slant. I've always been honest about that. That's what my opinion is. I stick to it. But in this case, the Courier-Journal didn't lie. On Tuesday, you know, the Courier-Journal reached out to Bill Lamb in an email, and Bill Lamb wrote back, according to the Courier-Journal story, that I told Terry that I'm not registered with either major party, never have been in my life, and therefore I think I am an independent. I vote for whomever I think is the best person for the office. I am conservative, so I may align more often with Republican ideology, but I have voted for many Democrats who are in office now, and I think I spread my support around pretty evenly. That's Bill Lamb's statement. Guess what, folks? Wrong answer. Lamb is a Republican. According to the Jefferson County Clerk's Office, he registered as a Republican in 2004, and 2 years later in 2006, when he moved into a new house, he signed an oath of voter form identifying himself as a Republican. When confronted with that, Lamb then tries to backtrack, which is typical of most people like Bill Lamb who have an agenda. Lamb said he wasn't trying to mislead anyone and that he just had no recollection of registering as a Republican. And, you know, his wife told him that he may have registered that way to vote in a primary election. So his wife has to tell him he's registered to vote Republican or give him a built-in excuse as to why after lying and then even, you know, even accusing somebody else of lying, he gets caught in his own lie. And that is why this story to me it was an interesting one. From beginning to end over the years, just to see the difference in Bill Lamb, and all of a sudden here's a guy who used to espouse integrity and character, somebody I actually looked up to. Prior to 2006 when I ran, I liked Bill Lamb's point of view. I didn't always agree with what he had to say. But I liked his point of view because it made you think. It made you want to engage. So in 2006, when I ran for mayor and he went out publicly to call that you know, all candidates should be included, I felt at that time that that went along with what I knew of Bill Lamb publicly. That he indeed did have integrity, he did have character, and, you know, he had values. You know, so to get into something like this, you know, a peeing contest, if you will, with the Courier-Journal, rather than take responsibility for your own actions, you know, that is really insulting to me. Because over the last 4 or 5 years, as I've stated, he has done some things that I think prove where his loyalties really are, and that loyalty is to his friends, such as Jim King. So, Bill Lamb, I've got to tell you, I'm disappointed. I always knew you better. Over the last few years, I've been extremely disappointed, and this is just another example of why. You're not going to sit here and tell me that you registered to vote in 2004 and then say you're an independent and you're not a member of either party. Now, if you wanted to sit here and say that you think you're a Democrat or Republican, okay. You're just not sure which one it is. That's fine. You know, a lot of people change the way that they think through the years. But, you know, 10 years ago, you registered as a Republican, and then you verified it 2 years later in 2006 at the same time you were telling the whole world that I deserve to be heard. I don't think that's a life thing. Now, in Bill Lamb's defense, if there is any, you know, according to the article, it doesn't look like he voted in between 2004 and 2012. So, you know, make of that what you will. But I just found it fascinating. So a lot of time on a little story, but, you know, I really found it disturbing. So I just wanted to point it out. I mean, that's the hypocrisy of our local media. It's not just Courier-Journal, folks. WDRB, the president, you know, the general manager, President Bill Lamb, all the different things that are going on. You know, when does it come down to accountability for any of them? WDRB used to be a Fox affiliate. They used to promote themselves as Fox 41 WDRB. But they decided they wanted to get away from that. I guess they got scared of being labeled. I don't know. But I found it very interesting. Thought you might find it interesting, too. So, you know, let's pay attention to all of this going forward. In other news, apparently the Metro Council is going to cut the proposed funding levels for all the police overtime that the mayor, Greg Fisher, has been screaming about and screaming about why he needed this franchise fee for LG&E. It's interesting. They're going to cut the funding, the proposed funding levels for police overtime. They're going to cut the proposed funding levels for youth programs. They're going to cut the proposed funding levels for family health centers. And they're asking the mayor's office to delay some hires so that they can balance this budget, this proposed budget for 2015 fiscal year. And, of course, Metro Council President Jim King said they needed to make these cuts because the franchise fee for LG&E customers was cut from 3% to 2%, which created a $1.8 million deficit. And, of course, they're saying that there's an also unexpected additional cost of $667,000 in the public defender's office. You got to laugh, right? I mean, you really got to laugh. You got to get the lawyers paid to screw up and waste their time on crap like they did with me just 2 years ago. But this is what's going on. So to break this down, it looks like the proposed cuts are going to be about $300,000 for police overtime. It's going to reduce the funding for youth programs by $200,000. Reduce the funding for low-income home energy assistance program from $300,000 to $200,000. And it's going to reduce the proposed appropriation plan to the family health centers by about $300,000. Folks, think about this. Those who qualify for low-income home energy assistance, for example, those are people who generally can't afford to pay their electric bill. Now those electric bills are going to go up, and they're going to have even less to pay for it. It's going to cost me and you more money. The whole idea of this LG&E franchise fee is illegal. It's illegal, folks. That's the truth. You can't put this cost on a business that's going to pass it on to their customers and then call it a fee and not a tax, especially when not 100% of the people who are going to benefit from this are going to pay the fee. It's strange to me how this kind of stuff continues going on. You know, so the Council's Budget Committee approved all of this. They'll take up the budget at this Thursday's meeting. I am kind of concerned about that. You know, you look at people and start wondering, okay, these are important things. Remember, to pass the LG&E surcharge fee or franchise fee or illegal tax, whatever you want to call it, in order to get that passed, they had to convince everybody that this was going to hire 24 new police officers, this was going to make it better, public safety better, increase all of this and everything else. And they just said, nope, sorry. We gave you 2%. Well, we didn't, because 90% of the people in this community that I've talked to said, hell no. And from what I understand, every council person was getting blowback from everybody in the community to say no on this LG&E franchise fee. And they passed it anyway. Their impetus for passing it were the lies and misdirection and everything else that these Democrats were telling each other. Most of them, not all. We've got to have it to fix public safety. Cindy Fowler was promised something by Marianne Butler. We're still not sure what that is. In my opinion, that's the way it went down. To be the deciding vote to make sure that this got passed. And lo and behold, now they get this extra money from this 2% instead of 3% LG&E franchise fee. And damn it, we're just not going to be able to have the money for police overtime. We're just not going to have it. But they increased the money to the social service organizations. They increased $350,000. You've got the healing place getting more money. You've got all kinds of different things getting more money. Volunteers of America. Volunteers of America is probably going to need the money, though. Volunteers of America is basically the only shelter in Louisville that allows families to stay together, according to, you know, King and Marianne Butler. And we're going to need that shelter because people are going to be kicked out of their homes because they can't afford the new LG&E bills or all the associated hidden taxes that go along with that. So we have to look at this kind of stuff and start wondering. Once again, the wool has been pulled over our eyes. Jim King, of course, goes and says, you can see that we're digging in on several things we didn't anticipate having to dig in on because of reducing the franchise fee from 3% to 2%. Well, maybe the 20% of the people who don't have to pay the franchise fee should be taxed. Maybe they should have to pay a breathing fee. Oh, no, you can't do that because they live in these separate incorporated cities and we have no right to make them pay what everybody else is paying. Even though they have the same rights to the monopoly we call LG&E or the Louisville Water Company or MSD, any of the above. So, you know, they screamed and hollered that we had this violence on March the 22nd. And lo and behold, have to have this money. That money is going to fix public safety. And then they cut it. Isn't that funny? You guys get it yet? Do you guys get it yet? That's the question. Other things that concern me. Let's get away from the budget for just a minute because we are going to get back into Kentucky's budget in a second. But let's get away from, let's get to something else right here in Louisville. Louisville Metro Police just arrested 47-year-old Angela Johnson. They pulled her over because she didn't have a rearview mirror on her vehicle. She was unable to produce a valid proof of insurance, but according to the story at WDRB, she allowed the officers to search her vehicle. The officers, of course, found a pipe and several different, you know, different things you use for smoking crack cocaine. But here's the interesting thing. They also found a folder containing personal and confidential documents belonging to another person, including that person's social security cards and birth certificates. What's disturbing here? Not much so far, right? It's another crackhead, you know, stealing somebody's identity to get stuff for themselves. No, this is where the story gets interesting, because the police say that she was also found with a Metro card. For those of you unfamiliar with a Metro card, it's basically an access card or an ID, or ID badge, things like that. And this card belonged to a high-ranking LMEMS administrative employee, Louisville Metro Emergency Medical Services, high-ranking administrative employee. That card gave her access to restricted government buildings. And if police go on record and say that the card was never reported as stolen, and they will not identify the employee. Think about that. You may not want to, but what is otherwise an insignificant story has some serious implications. A high-ranking Louisville Metro and Emergency Medical Services employee, high-ranking, this is the terminology of WDRB, high ranking, has their access card and their ID card stolen by a crackhead, but it wasn't reported. Now, this access card and this ID card, you know, gets you into all these restricted government buildings that you and I can't get into. You have to have an access card and ID card to do your job, clearly, right? Or you wouldn't have one, right? So we have a high-ranking Louisville Metro Emergency Medical Services employee does not report their ID Metro card as being stolen, even though it's something that they use every day. How can you not notice it missing? So did this crackhead did this crackhead, Angela Johnson, did she really steal this? Or is she trying to cover for somebody because she's scared? Now, I'm not trying to make a conspiracy theory out of all of this, but somebody explain to me how something like that happens, that this disappears, and you don't know it, even though you got to have it every day for your job. Now, Ms. Johnson, obviously, she lied about all kinds of things. She did, and you know, you figure that's going to happen. She says she was given a private document so she could obtain guardianship over a mentally handicapped 18-year-old woman. She had planned on taking those Social Security office yesterday, to get benefits for her. Of course, you know, that's all it. Says she worked at Mary Hurst, which is a safe place for children who've been through abuse or trauma. And, of course, when police were going to verify her employment, she recanted, admitted she doesn't work anywhere, and that she had no right to access the confidential documents. But this Metro card is key to me here. It really is. How can you, as an employee of Metro government, a high-ranking employee of Metro government, not notice your card is missing and not report it as such? Now, you could say that maybe she lost it, or whoever this employee was, male or female, maybe they lost it. Well, you would still have to report that card as being lost or stolen and get a new ID card. You clearly have some kind of authority or some kind of, you know, something that tells you that you're important, because this gives you access to all these restricted government buildings. But they never mentioned in this report, WDRB's report, that the car was never reported as lost. They said it was never reported as stolen. So was it lost? Was it stolen? I don't think so. Because those things go hand in hand in the workplace, and anybody that works in the private sector knows this. I'm curious to see what the relationship, if any, I will put that out there. I'm curious to see what the relationship, if any, is between Angela Johnson and this Louisville Metro Emergency Medical Services high-ranking employee is, to find out how Angela Johnson got this card that's going to get her into all these restricted buildings. It's phenomenal to me. I just put a link in the chat room for that story for those of you who are interested and want to click on it. It's right there. And while I'm looking at that, I decided to go a little bit further and actually looked at the Courier Journal and found another unusual story. Well, it's not really unusual, but it's a story that most people don't know. Allison Kleinhelter, goes by the name of Jamie apparently, was awarded $120,000 in 2011 as claims against her lawyer who had botched an appeal of a denial of disability benefits. Since 2011, this lawyer who screwed Ms. Kleinhelter over has only been paid about $4,000. Call it a little over $1,000 a year. And that's probably going to be all she gets, and here's why. Her ex-lawyer, Kenneth Bader, had no insurance, no malpractice insurance. And in December, he filed for bankruptcy so he could protect his personal assets. Ms. Kleinhelter, however, lost her home and her job at UPS, $37,000 a year job, when she became disabled in an accident at home. So she tried to get her disability benefits. She was denied. Kleinhelter said he would help her get it. Did not do his job. Jefferson Circuit judge found that he did not do his job. She was awarded $120,000 and never will be paid. And here's why. Because most people, myself included, folks, I mean, I consider myself this well-rounded, you know, individual, you know, and that I can research. I've never really had a situation or cause to research malpractice insurance on attorneys. I would just always thought it was a given. Doctors have malpractice insurance. Shouldn't attorneys have it as well? Apparently not. Most people assume that lawyers carry insurance. And according to trial lawyer Hans Pope, or Poppy, That's simply not true. Again, this is out of Courier. And yet, when faced with the opportunity to correct this wrong, in most people's opinions, the Kentucky Supreme Court has rejected proposals to force lawyers to disclose to their clients whether they have insurance or not. Now, think about that. They're not required to have malpractice insurance. Of course, we're required to have auto insurance, right? But, you know, they're not required to have this. Even though the court in 2006, the last time they ruled on this, didn't really give reasons, former Kentucky Bar Association President Charles English of Bowling Green said that one of the concerns that was raised about identifying attorneys without insurance might encourage people to make claims against the attorneys who are covered. So they were concerned that malpractice claims would pick up against lawyers who had insurance. Now, really seriously, think about that, all right? And then, of course, you have another ex-bar president, Beverly Storm, out of Covington, said that in 2000, the Kentucky Bar Association had considered requiring all lawyers to get insurance, but they dropped it because they were scared it would be too expensive, especially for struggling sole practitioners. So they felt like getting malpractice insurance for lawyers would be too expensive for new lawyers. How about these entrepreneurs who open up a business? They're required to have insurance on their business by law. Again, I mentioned auto insurance. Now Obamacare says everybody's required to have health insurance. And if you don't, you're going to have to pay a fine or be penalized. Everybody has to meet this requirement to some form or another except attorneys. Except attorneys. You think we screw around. We continue talking about we don't need more attorneys in Congress. We don't need more attorneys elected. Well, of course not. The Kentucky Bar Association itself is a joke. It's all about protectionism against for some people. The Judicial Conduct Commission is the same way. So attorneys get to self-regulate. Attorneys get to have any kind of charges against them done behind closed doors. We, the public, don't have any right to know anything when it comes to them. And, oh, by the way, everybody is required to carry insurance of some form or another when you have a business, but attorneys aren't. You can't practice medicine without malpractice insurance. But this attorney cost Ms. Kleinhelter $120,000. She won her case and can't get paid. Now, here's what's really funny. Let's just think about what Beverly Storm said. She said the Kentucky Bar Association had considered requiring all lawyers to get insurance, but dropped their proposal because they thought it would be too expensive, especially for struggling sole practitioners. What about that person who's out there making minimum wage that has to pay for their auto insurance? And I keep coming back to that, and here's why. Because according to Asa Gullett III, who's the chief operating officer of Lawyers Mutual Insurance Company of Kentucky, these are guys who underwrite the malpractice insurance, okay, went on record to say that liability coverage for attorneys is available for as little as $1,000 a year. You heard me right. As little as $1,000 a year. Think about that, folks. $1,000 a year. So what's it costing you each month? $83 and some change every month. You're forced to buy health insurance. A hell of a lot more expensive than that, even if you're a minimum wage employee. You're forced to buy auto insurance today, which costs more than that, or you're not allowed to drive. It doesn't matter whether you work at McDonald's. It doesn't matter whether you work at Ford Motor Company. You're required. to spend thousands of dollars every year to have insurance. But a lawyer, nah, they're not required to pay $1,000 a year. You want to talk about protectionism? There you go. And according to Pete Gullett, there's roughly 15,000 lawyers in the state, and nobody can tell you who's insured and who's not. Think about that. In the meantime, people like Ms. Kleinhelter, Jamie Kleinhelter, now has to live on $1,000 a month, which is roughly somewhere around a fourth of what she used to make before she went on disability. You think that $120,000 that her attorney owes her would not have helped her keep her home or get another one? I mean, it's those kind of things that just really should disturb the hell out of all of us. It really should. And I don't get why this kind of stuff continues going on. And nobody is fighting for this. Nobody. Nobody is fighting for this. It's really disturbing, you know. And of course, the lawyer, Bader, admitted when he was sued that he had never handled a long-term disability claim and that he shouldn't have agreed to help her in the first place. I don't know what to tell you, folks. I don't know what to tell you. But we're not going to force these guys to disclose whether they have malpractice insurance, or we're not going to force these guys to, you know, tell us anything and force these lawyers to have insurance of their own. It's disturbing that we allow this. You're on the air, Paul. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, Ed, I'm going to continue to take issue with your characterization that we continue to allow this. We meaning your listening audience and mm-hmm. everyone else in the community, we really don't allow it, okay? We really don't. But we just don't have the resources necessary to keep these clowns in line right now, okay? You call it apathy, and I think that's probably a fair term, that the okay. public at large is a little apathetic. But the public at large is too busy doing other things that are substantially more important to them and their families, like keeping a roof over their head, putting food on the table, trying to have a decent life. And the apathy will change to action once the behavior becomes oppressive enough for them to say enough's enough. And, Edward, I just don't think that we are collectively at that point yet. I just don't.
Well, and that's a problem for me. And I tell you why, because, you know, you talk, I mean, I talk to hundreds of people every week. You talk to many people, especially through Stop It and things like that. You know, and everybody we talk to, they're not happy. They're not happy with what's going on. You know, I mean, 7 or 8 out of 10 people that I talk to every day will sit here and tell you they're getting sick of this, they're tired of this, they don't know what to do about it, and then when you give them the opportunity to do something or you make suggestions, then it falls right back to that apathy. Like you just said, they're too busy worrying about themselves. You know, and collectively, that's the problem. They've done a great job dividing people and making people think solely about their own interests instead of others. Now, that sounds liberal, I guess, to some degree. But, you know, we have to come to a way to get this. We have to come to a way to get people involved. How hard is it to get a couple thousand people? Now, think about this. If 7 or 8 out of 10 people are having the same problem, how hard is it to get all those people together one day a week? Pick a day. Pick a day. One day a week, get 1,000, 2,000 people just to show up at Metro Hall and pick it outside and shut down the roads. Think about it.
Again, your theory, I think, has merit, but let's look back to the course of human history, particularly more modern history rather than the ancient history. And the modern history that I wanted to focus in on as an example is the rise of Adolf Hitler in what became Nazi Germany. Now,
mm-hmm.
Ed, you know, and history recounts that there were lots and lots of people who didn't care one whit for what the Nazis were doing. And some of them stood up as individuals, and they were crushed. Others banded together in small groups, and when they were discovered, they were executed. And it took outside forces from outside of Germany to decide to put an end to that when the Nazi regime became a little bit too big for its britches, okay? So, but over in Europe, they had a history of being subservient, because that's where the whole concept of kings and emperors came from, those two continents, Europe and Asia. But here in North America, we never had the concept of kings and emperors, all right? We had King George that was oppressing a bunch of colonists who fled England because they didn't like the concept of a king. And when King George appointed a governor in 1760, just a few short years later, like 16, we had the beginning of the American Revolution. So the question is, Ed, is what's it going to take for the current crop of Americans to decide enough is enough? I don't know the answer to that right now. Okay.
That much we'll agree on. I don't either. And that I guess, is the problem, because, you know, I'm looking at this stuff. I mean, let's look now. You know, it's like the whole selling point. I don't know if you caught the beginning of the show or not. We were talking about the LG&E franchise fee earlier. And the whole selling point of the franchise
fee. Oh, the illegal tax?
Yeah, right, the illegal tax. Well,
I know you're That particular thing is a good example of the elite ruling class getting a little bit too big for its britches. Okay.
Well, I agree. And here's the thing with that, though. This is the point I was making with that earlier, is the fact that, you know, when they forced this down our throats, the Metro Council Democrats forced this down our throats, folks, along with Kelly Downard, who basically is a rhino, but when they forced this down our throats, they forced it down our throats by telling us that they had to have this for public safety and that this was going to hire 24 officers and all the other stuff. And yet now that they only got 2% instead of 3%, now they're saying they're going to cut police overtime, they're going to cut money to the youth programs, they're going to cut money to the family health centers, all of these things that they were going to spend money on, you know, to help us because of one major violence attack on March the 22nd, because they didn't get a full 3%, now all these programs are going to lose money. They're going to be cut by hundreds of thousands of dollars. So this is the whole point of this overreaching crap and these egotistical people. That's the whole thing. They didn't get what they wanted, so now they're going to sell us this fear again, and I promise you, come January, they're going to go after the local officer sales tax again, and I promise you, if they don't get that, they're going to find another franchise fee until they're stopped in their tracks. But this is the thing about apathy. Our Metro Council members were told in no uncertain terms by their constituency, not one Metro Council member said that they had more calls supporting this than were against it. In fact, 9 out of 10 people we talked to, and that's not an exaggeration, folks, 9 out of 10 people we talked to say that they were against this, and the ones who say that they talked to their Metro Council members said that they told their Metro Council member that. Even Cindy Fowler, our good old Cindy Fowler right here in my district, in District 14, was promised something by Marianne Butler, in my opinion, to be the deciding vote to allow it to go through. And now that it's went through, now that they had this extra money, oh, well, we're $1.8 million short on the budget, so we're going to cut all this extra police overtime and all these youth programs and everything we need to help stop youth violence. It was a crock of garbage. But the people allowed it to happen anyway.
Ed, again, I'm going to take issue. No, we didn't, Ed. We didn't allow it to happen. Ed, we didn't have any choice in the matter. We did not. You just stated objections. Ed, we the people voiced our objections, and the people who were in charge of stuff decided to ignore us. No, we did what we thought should be done at that moment. All right. Now, if you want to advocate for something, advocate for putting together a committee that will seek to defeat these bastards come November. Make them pay handily for that.
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
That would be a whole lot more useful for you to rally, get a bunch of folks to rally around the issue, and then you assist them in whatever way you can, rather than simply say, we the people allowed it to happen.
I'm already involved in that. And there's other people around the county and the city of Louisville that are doing the same thing. My point is this, though. When we talk about apathy, and when I talk about we the people allow this, see, for me, and maybe I need to make that distinction, but for me, when something like that happens and our elected leaders tell us that we don't matter when 90% of us say they're wrong, of course, we don't have the vote. We elect that. That's why we have a representative government. We elect them to vote for us. When they don't vote the way that we tell them to vote, you're right, we change that in elections. But in the meantime, why has there been no orchestrated effort to organize? Why are people so scared to organize into groups of hundreds or thousands downtown and stand up in protest of this stuff? We've got over 700,000 people here in the city of Louisville, Jefferson County. 700,000 people. Of that, at least half are adults. And we can't get a couple thousand people to get involved and go down there with picket signs and everything else and tell them, you're wrong, we're going to hold you accountable, and scare the hell out of them. That's what I'm talking about. That gets us immediate results until the election happens. I guess, does that make sense to you?
Well, what you're advocating is 60s and 70s style street-level protests.
You betcha.
Okay. Well, you know, 60s and 70s style street-level protests just aren't doing a whole lot here in 2014. They're just not getting a lot done, all right? If you stop to think about it, that was a different era, and street-level protests from back then, sometimes they were completely orchestrated to fit a political agenda. But, you know, Ed, you can get together some folks just like they did in the pre-Revolutionary War days to meet in churches, small groups, to meet in pubs, small groups, and talk about the issues of the day and formulate an action plan. You can do that as well.
Those things, again, are already going on, and I am involved in some of those. But the point I guess I'm trying to get is, you say those tactics don't work today, and maybe you're right. But when we look at the protesters of the 60s and 70s, you had strength of conviction, you had courage, you had values, and you stood up for what you believed in. You weren't fearful of repercussions.
And I think is
the problem.
But in Nazi Germany, there were people who... I know, but you want to make a parallel between the way our government is being run today and the rise of the Nazis in Germany, because the Nazis relied upon fear of the government to keep the people in line. And if that's a parallel that you want to make, I can agree with that. I agree that people today fear their government. They fear their government.
That's very true. That's very true. And that's the thing. And then there are repercussions to some degree. I mean, I suffer repercussions. I have suffered repercussions. I continue to suffer repercussions. And I will continue to suffer repercussions because I rage against the machine, if you will. You know, I've taken on the most powerful people here. I've won. They don't like that. So there are repercussions for somebody like me who is outspoken and everything else. But there is strength in numbers, folks. You take one single individual like myself, who is able to hold the most powerful people in this town accountable, like your Jim Kings and your Judy Greens. You know, one person made a difference. So can you imagine what would happen if thousands of people did the same thing, if they banded together? And that's why I think the 60s and 70s style of taking to the streets in protest and those kind of things, I honestly believe that they would make a difference. Because these guys in power today, you know, they expect the individuals to come after them. You've got bloggers, you've got you know, writers, everybody else doing this crazy stuff today, adding all of this stuff. We're working our butts off to get sunshine and transparency. However, we're doing that, but it's easy for the establishment to take on the one individual, but it's not so easy to take on thousands. And that's why I think we need to rise up, and I can't understand why that hasn't happened. Now,
It hasn't got oppressive enough. Look to South America.
I agree.
What's been going on down there? And let's focus on one of the current events that's going on down in South America, the World Cup. All right? The World Cup in in Brazil, there were tens of thousands of people in protest in all of Brazil's largest cities at the way the government was absolutely spending billions of dollars to build these glorious edifices that were connected with the World Cup, while at the same time ignoring the needs of the everyday citizen. That got people out in the streets because it became oppressive enough. So, you know, what's it going to take for our current way of life to become oppressive enough for the folks to say enough is enough? Get that answer,
you know,
and you will rule the movement.
Unfortunately, I don't have that answer. I wish I did. I really do, because, you know, we continue to sit here, we continue to rail, we continue to get involved, we continue to file charges, we continue to go into court and stand up, and we do all these different things as individuals. But we can't seem to get, even a collective like myself, are scared. There are limits to what they want to do. It's like the LG&E invisible tax, the illegal tax. Nobody's going to stand up and put that anywhere. They're scared to. Business certainly isn't going to do it. They're scared to, because there's always backlash. That's the thing. It's not just the individual citizens as a collective who are scared of the backlash. It's also the people with the money who have the most to lose. You know,
Ed. No, hang on here. You're forgetting another story out of the headlines today. There is a somewhat courageous local attorney, and I find that remarkable that we have a local attorney that's actually going out there and putting his neck on the line. Guy's name is Teddy Gordon. He seems to have zeroed in on the Jefferson County School Board.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the news tonight because of a bullying policy that allowed a teenage girl to be bullied. She suffered the consequences, and the bully didn't. But yet the public school has got this policy in place, and it sure as hell looks good on paper, but how come they're not enforcing it? And that's exactly what Teddy Gordon is taking to court. He is taking it to court again. So there are individuals out there, and people like Teddy Gordon, it would be helpful if he could be cloned once or twice or maybe three times. And then, Ed, I think that you will begin to see some of the change that you so ardently seek.
Well, I understand there's people like Teddy Gordon out there. As I said, that's exactly kind of what I'm trying to make the point of. We have people like Teddy Gordon who gets things done. We have people like me who gets things done. You have people like Ray Barker that stands up and gets things done. You know, there are individuals out there. But why is it that even the individuals, I mean, there is a limit somewhere to where Teddy Gordon is going to go. Now, Teddy Gordon's claim to fame, you know, to sit here and go after JCPS for the erroneous no bullying policies, we know that the zero tolerance crap was all a joke because it was always whatever they wanted to allow. We just found that out again when they lowered the standards because it seemed to be that more black students were getting in trouble than white students, so they were getting disciplined more. Just because you're black or white, if you're in that violence atmosphere, you know, you're supposed to get disciplined. But now we're using everything to be politically correct. Teddy Gordon's claim to fame has been his challenges to the JCPS and the school board. So to do this, to me, isn't taking a risk. To do this, to me, isn't taking a risk. It's protecting your investment. You know, if he didn't take this on as somebody else did, then he would lose his claim to fame that helped provide him with an income for his family and his way of life.
Oh,
now, I know that sounds kind of harsh.
I think you're over the top on that one, Ed. Look,
could
Teddy
be.
Gordon,
could
in
be.
The beginning, he had to make the conscious decision to take on JCPS, and he did. Now,
sure
at that
did.
Point in time, he definitely put a whole bunch of things at risk. His law practice, his income, his livelihood, okay, his reputation. He put it all on the line.
I'm not saying he didn't in the beginning, Paul.
That's the same thing that the people who founded this country did. That's the kind of attitude and spirit that founded this country. Okay? They were later rewarded for that, and they got a lot of glory. But see, Ed, you're criticizing him for getting fame.
Far from it. I'm not criticizing him at all. I respect the hell out of what Teddy Gordon does. I'm just saying, I wish that people like Teddy Gordon, myself, and others in this community could all sit down together and get these thousands of people that we need that are so upset in one place at one time and say, hey, look, let's do this. But it doesn't happen. That's what I'm getting at.
Why does that not happen? Why does people like you and Teddy Gordon doesn't get together? Why is it?
I wish I had the answers to that, Paul. I've offered. I've reached out. I've done everything I can do. But there's always some excuses. It can't happen. So everybody does, I guess, to some degree, have their own agenda, including me. I'm not saying that I don't have an agenda. My agenda is to clean up government and to get rid of these crooked politicians and put the power back with the people. That's my agenda. If that means JCPS, if that means the Metro Council, if that means the President of the United States, then that's what I'm going to work towards. So everybody has an agenda, but at the end of the day, truly, when you look at it, JCPS is basically run by the government, period. You know, all the problems that we have, the one thing that we have in common, the one thing that all of us have in common with our own agendas is that the government is the principal problem. So let's work on that problem. Let's stand as one. Let's go to the streets. You know, do what has to be done. That's my problem. I don't know yet what it's going to take. I wish I did, or we would already be there. So the only thing I can do is sit here every day and reach out to the hundreds of thousands that pay attention to what we do. Reach out to these people. Continue putting the message out there. Continue advocating to get what we need and what we deserve. We are the citizens of the United States. It is our power. It's up to us to exercise it. And if these elected leaders aren't going to do this, you're right. We have to work to get them out of office. But in the meantime, we have to let them know that their job is in jeopardy. These people have continued in many cases to be elected, like your Dan Johnsons, since the 90s, like your Mitch McConnells. All of these career politicians continue to get elected, even though they're not doing the will of the people. So we have to make them scared for their job, make them earn their job. And they're not going to do that because the pattern of behavior is, I can do anything I want to do, and they're still going to elect me, so I have no accountability. That creates this problem. That's the problem I've got, is why we are so apathetic and why we continue to allow this, not just today, but for the last many years.
Again, Ed, I'm taking issue with your phrase, we continue to
allow. I understand.
I completely disagree with the we part of continuing to allow. Okay?
You know, we'll agree to disagree. We'll agree to disagree on that. I can respect your opinion. I understand that. I respect your opinion. We can agree to disagree, you know, but at the end of the day, that's where I'm at. There's one thing I'm at right now, too, Paul, and I apologize, but we are at the end of the hour, man. Wow, we blew right through. That's it for tonight. Paul, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. It's always great to hear from you. I love your point of view. We don't always agree, but it's a lot of fun getting there. And I tell you, folks, closing rants, really, truthfully, what's to rant about? I can sit here and I can spend the next 2 or 3 minutes ranting about this subject or that subject, and I can find a way to bring it all together and make it sound real good, and you're going to sit there and be inspired or uninspired. It's your choice. So at the end of the day, though, really truthfully, what is there to rant about? Simply this. We have the power. It is our government, representative government. That's the way we're set up in America. We elect these people to represent us, and when they do not represent us, then we have to make them accountable. The best way to hold them accountable, no doubt, at the ballot box. But unfortunately, the two-party system, the uniparty itself, are scared to even put up candidates in many races. Let's look at the Dan Johnson race in District 21. Let's look at other races around the country. Because it's considered a so-called Democratic stronghold, or it's considered a so-called Republican stronghold, then the party who feels like they're in the weakest position don't even put up a candidate to run against them, a credible candidate. And when you do, you don't support them. We found that out right here. the reality is, if you want to make a difference, you want to make a change, then you have to sometimes stand up without fear of repercussions. It's not always easy. Nobody said it was going to be easy. Life is hard. Life is hard. But you have to decide what's important in life. Are you happy with the status quo that continues eroding the American way of life? And if you're not, then it's up to you to stand up and do something about it. My view matters. That's what MVM stands for. That's why we do what we do. Because we want you to be empowered, because your view matters. And you have to make sure that you get your view out there. You also have to be understanding and realize, even like me and Paul, we can agree to disagree. I don't have all the answers. Paul doesn't have all the answers. Nobody out there has all the answers. But somewhere, somehow, it's through the communication. It's through making sure your view is heard. We can somehow find a middle ground where the answers are a little bit easier to follow. So tonight, there's not going to be a long rant. I'll see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here, same time, same channel. But I will leave you with this.
Greed, deception, abuse of power, that's no plan. I'm the enemy, because I like to think. I like to read. I'm into freedom of speech and freedom of choice. I'm the kind of guy who likes to sit in a greasy spoon and wonder, gee, should I have the T-bone steak or the jumbo rack of barbecue ribs with the side order of gravy fries? I want high cholesterol. I want to eat bacon and butter and buckets of cheese, okay? I want to smoke a Cuban cigar the size of Cincinnati in a non-smoking section. I want to run through the streets naked with green jello all over my body reading Playboy magazine. Why? Because I suddenly might feel the need to, okay, pal? I've seen this. Do you know what it is? It's a 47-year-old virgin sitting around in his beige pajamas drinking a banana broccoli steak singing, I'm an Oscar Mayer wiener.